This is the Best of Sports Channel 8, the radio show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Now here's the best of today's Sports Channel 8, the radio show.
CBS Sports joins us in studio now. Josh Goodson, Brian Geisinger, ACCSports.com, the ACC Sports Journal. What are we talking about here? Are we doing the Christmas list? No, let's talk about let's talk college football with Chip Patterson.
I heard I might have to come play judge.
Oh, yes. Yes. That's what we're doing with Chip Patterson. First of all, tell me about this dude, Arkansas head coach Sam Pittman.
He's a joy.
All right, Rand, can you see the tweet that Chip has just put on the dock
in
this segment?
Yes, I already have it ready to go.
All right,
how about this?
Describe him and then...
Hey, Coach, are you pretty good at recruiting offensive linemen?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Coach, you've been in the SEC a while. Do you think that you might have good relationships with high school coaches that breed these 6'6", 350-pound monsters?
Yes, sir.
This guy is a joy. I cannot tell you how happy I am that in this coaching carousel, the SEC is always going to get focus at CBS because of the partnership.
Sure.
But we just got Lane Kiffin and this guy in the SEC West.
Yes, sir.
He was the offensive line coach at Butch Davis, yet another former Butch Davis North Carolina assistant who has gone on to accomplish great things.
So this guy was at UNC?
Yes.
Wow. Sam Pittman, Tar Heel.
So he was the offensive line coach, and now...
Yes, sir!
So Arkansas went from having Chad Morris, like, let me draw up all these dope plays and have all my five-star wide receivers go out and run around. I mean, I know he didn't do that at Arkansas, but they went from that guy to Sam Pittman. They went from that. They went from offensive guru to crazy guy. Holy crap.
For those listening, this is not the same cut.
It's not.
These are like seven different...
That is the sound of the end of the world. Like, that is what you hear.
This guy. Offensive line coach at UNC?
Oh. Yes.
Former UNC offensive line coach.
Former associate head coach at UNC for season two.
Sam Pittman.
Yes, sir.
Dude, when the apocalypse hits and the four horsemen show up to kill you.
One of them is Sam Pittman.
That's the sound you hear. That's the last thing you hear.
And he's holding his English bulldog and he's like...
he's going to snap... He will snap your head off with a whip. Yes, sir. And he definitely looks like a dude that jumps in O-line drills with the O-line.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes.
I mean, 100% guy jumps in O-line drills without the pads and hits dudes that are in pads to show people
I'm bookmarking this. This is too good.
It's so good.
What are some more things that we can be assured about Sam Pittman other than, like, okay.
That he has a blocking sled in his house, actually. It's like there's no couch. There's just a blocking sled.
This dude has a blocking sled in his house. He definitely jumps in O-line drills. Bills. Oh, he's not even worried about who's going to play quarterback. He just He just knows. Maybe after seeing Ed Orgeron, because people used to kind of do this about Coach O, where like the main thing casual fan talked about was, man, this guy sounds like a crazy Cajun.
Right.
But now it's working,
right? And Dabo Sweeney was never a coordinator. Ed Orgeron was never a coordinator. Yeah. And so Sam Pittman's another example of, like, you don't have to go up the traditional ladder of these are the steps to be a head coach. If you have the good relationship with high school coaches, and he was also the offensive line coach at Arkansas from 2013 to 2015 under Brett Bielema when they had, I don't know if you remember, Alex Collins was there.
Yeah, I can see this guy
running back, yeah.
I can see this guy getting along well with Brett Bielema.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, sir!
There are like a lot of fallout. Number one, I am so excited to listen to this man speak about football on a regular basis as Arkansas's head coach. Number two, kind of a loss for Georgia. You just lost your best recruiter for offensive line, and that team has been kind of based around its offensive line under Kirby Smart.
I want to see the Arkansas like Board of Trustees meeting discuss it. Like, y'all, this Chad Morris guy, he's a little too like smart for his own good, man. We need somebody that could just bring the big boys.
Yes, also, the doors fly open.
This is our guy. This is our guy.
A little too much vertical passing. We need like, some more ground game here in Arkansas.
Yeah, I remember like just laughing a lot more on the rubber chicken dinner. Like, Morris, he's out there, like, designing plays. I don't even understand what he's talking about sometimes.
The last time that Arkansas played in the SEC championship game was 2006, and they really didn't choose to have a passing game. They had Darren McFadden
the
literally
was
snapping the ball.
Forget it. Just eliminate the quarterback position.
If we have five huge dudes that are bigger than the five biggest dudes you have, we're getting somewhere.
Hey, you know what 4 yards per carry is? On schedule. On the way to first down.
Yep. All right. Well, our other.
You want to jump to the other side of the battle line trophy between Arkansas and Missouri?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Arkansas and Missouri play for a trophy?
Yeah. The battle line trophy.
All right, so Missouri hired Eli Drinkwitz. Josh Goodson and I were embracing debate. And part of this was, I don't even know, I'm certainly not the person to speak on college football anyway, but I just sort of was miring a take. And Josh Goodson opposed me in it. He says that Eli Drinkwitz, his best path, regardless of whether or not he's going to be a successful head coach, is to get out of App as soon as possible, strike while the iron's hot, get in the SEC, get that money, and then either you succeed and jump up from there, or if it doesn't go great, you're still young, you got a ton of money, and you can jump on another great program as a coordinator and still get another shot as a head coach.
Or better yet, get on as an analyst, keep getting your buyout money, and also get a smaller check from somewhere else.
I, again, not necessarily like claiming this is the right way, but was curious if we were at a position where we saw it morph in college basketball recently where folks would Greg Marshall was the example I was using, or even Mark Few to a degree.
Shaka Smart for
Shaka
a while.
Shaka Smart, yeah. Where you don't have to get out of that mid-major job immediately after your good season because, A, now some of the mid-major teams can pay decent money, and, B, if you're successful for a decent amount of time, even at a mid-major program, the big boys will eventually give you a call, and you don't have to worry about jumping to a program like Missouri that doesn't quite have the history and the tradition of a program. You could jump to one of those you should probably be winning programs. Is that the case in football now, where you could stay at App State for 5 years? Say, I could say no to Missouri. I'll catch a desperate Florida or USC or Ohio State, and they'll need somebody with a shiny App State, 4 Sun Belts in 5 years, maybe a Cotton Bowl or whatever it might be, and bypass taking the Missouri or, I mean, locally the UNC or NC State type jobs that are middle tier, not necessarily guaranteed winner programs. Any thoughts on that?
I think that Eli is a unique example, and I think that Appalachian State is a unique setting. How much of App State's success do we attribute to Eli Drinkwitz?
No.
And how much of App State's success do you attribute to the program that Scott Satterfield built up and led into the FBS? I mean, I think there's got to be, if you're Eli Drinkwitz, some looking in the mirror and being like, no, there might be a drop-off coming. Yeah. And right. there might not be another Power 5 opportunity.
Yeah. That was one of Goodson's main
and
points.
And for Eli specifically, a lot of people say he's a good coordinator,
right.
but he's not the best, like the next best coach, and there's nothing really. Like, at NC State, they had issues with scoring at times sure. and red zone stuff, the stuff that he was tasked with doing. So yep. I think it was just time to cash in. You're going to get, what, $2 to $3 million a year?
Well, all right, I think that he's really impressive. To right. listen to Eli Drinkwitz speak about football, you're like, man, this guy really knows what he's talking about. And I can see why athletic directors and search firms have had him high on a list, because when you sit down with him, he sounds really yep. impressive. Yep. I think that Missouri fans are really frustrated with the way the offense was run mm-hmm. under Barry Odom. I mean, that offense was woeful, even with Kelly Bryant leading it this past season. And I think that you are getting someone who has charmed you, like, on the chalkboard, who's done, like, hey, when I had Jalen Samuels and Nyheim Hines, I found all of these different creative ways to get mm-hmm. them the ball, and now look at the ways that some of those same ideas are being put in place at the NFL level with your scat backs and your tweeners. And so he does have, at least when you get on the chalkboard, some really good ideas about mm-hmm. football. It is yet to be proven whether Eli Drinkwitz at 36 is going to be able to run a program,
yep.
come up with the schedule, make the hires, because at Appalachian State, my belief is a lot of that was just built in. The support staff, the culture, the people that had been in that building for so long sort of helped keep things moving along. And I will add this, the SEC is a little bit like the NFL, where once you get in the room, it's a little bit of a lifetime membership card.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so even if he's fired in 4 years, he's always former Missouri head coach Eli Drinkwitz.
Yeah, I mean, in less than a
year.
And yet, in less than a year, he went from offensive coordinator at NC State to SEC head coaching job. That's the parlay he made. I feel bad for the kids at App, obviously, but they took to Twitter yesterday and seemed to be sort of saying, this is a player-first program. We're going to go win a bowl game, and we're going to be straight going forward, no
yeah.
matter who they hire, which was pretty cool to see as well. But I obviously feel for those kids. But, of course, you understand why Drinkwitz made yep. the move. It makes too much sense, both in terms of financially and job quality, status, everything.
Larry Fedora tried to get points with Carolina fans for talking about Tennessee offering him the job after, I think it was just 1 year
yeah.
at North Carolina. I wonder if there were evenings where Larry Fedora was like, hey, maybe I should have gone and taken that Tennessee job. And I will say for Appalachian State, I'm glad you brought up the player reaction. I think that is now one of the best open jobs. Not just like one of the best group of five mm-hmm. jobs, but of all the jobs that are open right now. And we just saw like Jeff Scott, Clemson co-offensive coordinators, going to USF. I think that you are going to see – like maybe a Michigan offensive coordinator, Josh Gaddis, former Wake Forest player. Shout out Deeks.
Brother Durham.
Yeah. Yeah, like you might
about that guy in the Herald Sun.
You might see him sort of floated out there as an opportunity if he wants to come and take over the program. You're going to look at App State and you're going to say, that is a place where I can win championships. And the Mountaineers are going to be fine.
Chip Patterson, CBS Sports, also in here with our man Brian Geisinger, ACCSports.com, ACC Sports Journal, Josh Goodson. Jonathan Rand is the producer. And I'm excited to tell you that our Battle of the Blues Scratch and Win contest is coming for the most coveted tickets in sports, Duke versus UNC. Listen to 99.9 The Fan during the college basketball season for your chance to win one of our 999 scratch tickets that we're giving away on air, at events, and on our social media pages. You could win a pair of tickets to the coveted game, Duke at UNC on February 8th, or the rematch, UNC at Duke on March 7th. It's the Battle of the Blues Scratch and Win contest presented by Tar Heel Basement Systems. On the other side, the next side, the one coming up, we will ask Brian Geisinger and Chip Patterson to give us our ACC good, bad, and ugly. We might be mixing football and basketball in. Find out next.
Yes, sir!
Sports Show at the Radio Show. This is what Arkansas fans are singing right now. Sam Pittman is coming to town. Yes, sir! He's making a Josh Goodson in studio, Brian Geisinger, ACCSports.com and ACC Sports Journal as well, and Chip Patterson making one of his two weekly visits with us from CBS Sports and the Cover 3 podcast. All right, Chip.
Jermaine played bass, right?
Man, I don't know these things. You know I'm not a liner notes guy.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
I'm a can-I-figure-out-how-to-play-this-song guy, not a who's-playing-what-instrument guy.
Bass lines on Jackson 5 songs. Ooh. Groove.
Yeah.
Much love to Jermaine.
All right, we embraced debate. I said Drinkwitz could have stayed at App State for 5 years and jumped above a Missouri job. Josh Goodson said he did the right thing, went while he should. Who won the debate?
Josh.
Wrong.
Woo!
Wrong. Wrong.
App State might be better off. It is unproven. Eli Drinkwitz is an unproven entity.
That's true.
I'm not going to bet against him, but that's not where I'm putting all my chips.
It also is just going to be a tough dilemma, though. If, as you said, App State is a good job. They because of the Michigan game and then backing that up with other good seasons, they have more high profile than certainly any other Sun Belt team currently on as national exposure. Other than some of those Memphis, Cincinnati, Houston, there's a couple teams in that group of five with like high profiles, but App is, I think, in that conversation.
I think that no other group of five program has a culture of winning like what they've done for the last 15 years.
But that just means they're going to keep being successful and their head coaches are going to keep being hot prospects for other jobs. And that's just you got to embrace it, but that's just tough.
And I think a piece of App that we forgot about is their conference is what held them back from going to the New Year's Six. Like, Boise doesn't have that issue.
Yeah, that's
the WAC
true.
The Mountain West is right. A little bit better.
Yeah.
And so they've been able to play in the Fiesta Bowls, and maybe Eli, unproven, but also maybe it was like, look, we just went 12-1. We beat two Power Five teams on the road. We only lost one game by like a touchdown at home, and it was rainy and whatever. And we still went to the New Orleans Bowl. Like, where else are you going to go? What else are you going to do?
Everyone around that program knows nothing but winning. They won three straight national championships under Jerry Moore. They made it to the Sun Belt. They've won three or four straight Sun Belt titles. They'll be all right.
Yeah.
All right. ACC action this weekend, both football and basketball.
A lot of hoops.
That means that Brian Geisinger and Chip Patterson have lots of things to pull from as they give us their ACC good, bad, and ugly of the week. Brian Geisinger, let's start with you. What's your ACC good this week?
All right, good. Doubleheader here for good. We're going to go football. We're going to do a little basketball here, too. T. Higgins in the ACC title game, not really a fair fight against a depleted UVA secondary.
MVP of the ACC championship game, correct?
9 receptions, 182 receiving yards, 3 touchdowns, and had 1 catch that I don't know if I was actually the one that clipped this and got it up on Twitter. I don't know if you guys saw that or not. Them fading out of bounds. As the ball is like a yard or two out of bounds, and he's able to keep that left foot down, snag it as he's like Chris Carter style, cascading to the turf of Bofa, but able to hold on. Quite the catch, quite the performance for T. Higgins. The last 3 games, 18 receptions for T. Higgins, 9 of them for touchdowns. That is carry the 50% of his catches for touchdowns. Pretty good. Also hoops. I want to give a shout-out to one of my favorite players in the ACC as far as basketball goes. We all think Louisville is pretty good this year, right?
Yeah. Sure.
No dominant team in college hoops, but Louisville looks pretty damn good. 9-0 now, 2-0 in the ACC. Jordan Moore is getting a lot of the headlines for them, and he's having a great season shooting 3.
Are you
scoring.
Sutton Hive?
I've been driving the Dwayne Sutton bus since February 2016 when I saw him play at UNC Asheville in a game when I was up there. He took on Coastal Carolina and Cliff Ellis, a game that I went to.
I saw Arcade Fire first.
Exactly.
I saw Arcade Fire first.
I'm a Dwayne Sutton hipster. And I am.
I mean, you saw him in Asheville. It was meant to be.
I did. I went up there to get away for a weekend, and I'm a junkie, so I stumbled into a game at Kimmel Arena up
in
Asheville.
That's how love happens when you're not looking for it.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's turned into an amazing player. I think he's one of the smartest. I think he and Trent Forrest are two of the smartest basketball players in the ACC. Trent Forrest, the point guard at Florida State. But just a monster on the offensive glass, an outrageous offensive rebounder, a good passer, doesn't need to score to win, but, like, Louisville needs him on the court to look their best. And he just – he's the guy that allows Jordan Ward to run around and flourish and score all those points because Dwayne Sutton does literally all the dirty work. If Louisville is to win the ACC and win a national title this year, Dwayne Sutton's going to have a monster season, even if he doesn't score a crazy number of points. And I would also say this too, like, I don't think Dwayne Sutton is necessarily an NBA prospect, but I'm not saying he's not an NBA prospect. You find someone who's smart, who knows how to play basketball and can do lots of things, I just think he's a phenomenal player, and he does not get the pub that he should be getting nationally.
I need that as a headline on accsports.com. Brian Geisinger says Dwayne Sutton. No, Brian Geisinger is not saying that Dwayne Sutton is not an NBA prospect.
He can play basketball, man.
Louisville is a fun team to watch right now. Chip Patterson, you're ACC good.
First of all, so happy that he's on the Dwayne's, because I've been sensing the Dwayne Sutton. True. You know, things have been bubbling beneath the scenes, and Brian Smart. So obviously, there's something to it. Hey. Can we give some love to Trevor Lawrence?
Yeah, like, it's been amazing.
When Heisman voters had to put together their, and obviously the ACC, all ACC voters, you know, they named Trevor Lawrence a first-team quarterback, so it's not as though his success has been missed on them. But I mean, Trevor Lawrence, like, he won't because of narratives, but statistically, in terms of what he's been able to do over the back half of the season, his end-of-season numbers. He should be a finalist.
Yeah.
He should be getting second or third place votes behind Joe Burrow as one of the best quarterbacks in the entire country in the championship game against Virginia. 16 for 22, 302 yards. That's 72.7% completion percentage, 4 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. This guy has not thrown an interception in nearly 2 months. He's just been nothing but touchdowns and air yards. And I think that the way that he started the season, kind of trying to live up to the Trevor Lawrence that's been painted as a future number one overall pick,
right,
then sort of settled back into the flow of the offense, he's gotten more productive with also missing the mistakes.
I just remembered he's only a sophomore.
Like, yeah.
He's going to do this again next year. Like, they'll lose Higgins to the pros, but Justin Ross will be back.
Yep.
Joseph
Nagata.
Yeah, exactly. And what's the other Frank Layden? Frank Ladson?
Sure.
They have Lin J. Dixon will step up and replace ATN at running back. Like, Clemson's going to be a war machine again this season.
It's not ridiculous that he's not going to win the Heisman. It is ridiculous that he's not being talked about as, like you said, a top three or at least four or five.
Three
player.
Or more touchdowns, 0 interceptions in every game since October 19th.
Yeah, Frank Ladson, that's who I'm thinking of. 9 catches this year, 3 of them for touchdowns. Freshman.
That is the ACC good. How about your ACC bad, Brian Geisinger?
So far, Wake this season, I think they've had... Wake Forest has not been as bad, I think, quite as I thought they were going to be. Now they're 5-5. That's not good. But the teams they've lost to, like Arizona, that's not a bad loss.
Right.
Penn State, not a bad loss. That was on the road, too. NC State's a pretty good... These are like NCAA tournament teams, perhaps. But just once, I said this earlier in the show, but just once again, Wake Forest's defense under Manning really is going to struggle. Stopping the basketball, stopping screen roll action. NC State got basically wherever they wanted against Wake Forest on Saturday. 7 dunks for the Wolfpack in that game. 17 of 26 shooting at the rim. 12 of 22 three-point shooting. Like, this is the exact offensive profile that you want. They had stayed at 17 turnovers in that game, but most of those came in the last couple of minutes. I don't know. Wake Forest, the defense, once again, definitely not good. So I'll say it's bad under Danny Manning.
And there was no one at that game. And I'm not saying, again, I'm not going to get into the... There's a lot of people not going to college games anyways, but a 2 p.m. Saturday... Yep. ACC Big Four battle. It was really bad. Like the lack of people there.
And maybe all the Wake fans were in Charlotte to support the Atlantic Division in the ACC Championship game.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Fair.
Chip Patterson, you're ACC bad.
Dabo's a little exhausting right now.
Yeah, we were saying we might need to do a new segment called "What Did Dabo Say Today?"
Okay, so you already touched on the. Fellas, since 1966, no team started number one, gone undefeated, finished number three. The only good side to this is Trevor Lawrence was also interviewed yesterday on Selection Sunday. It really does seem like while Dabo has his messaging it doesn't seem to actually be driving the motivations of the players. The players are motivated because they know what it takes to win a national championship. They know what it, like, they've seen it before. They've lived it before. So this is very much taking care of business for a lot of those players.
I also, Dabo looks like a guy who could have had a locker room chat or several along the lines of, hey, boys, I got to go play this game out here and say some stuff. Don't pay attention to any of it. Absolutely none of it. We'll talk as a family. You know, you talk to me. You knock on my door if you want to talk to me. I'll tell you what I'm thinking. Don't take what I'm thinking about what I'm saying out there. That's all for fun.
I don't think it's explicit. I think it is implicit in the same way that, like, when a family member gets the details wrong on a story, I've learned you just sit back and let him go.
Right.
You're like, nah, that was a different Christmas, but you know what? He's rolling, so I'm going to let him do that. And I think that's the way Clemson's players are. It's like, oh, that's just Dabo talking. That's just Dabo being Dabo.
And your ACC ugly, Brian Geisinger.
Not mashing the panic button just yet over in Chapel Hill, nor on the Cole Anthony train. Not doing it. It's only been a couple of games, and some of them UNC's played very well, and Cole Anthony has had some good games. He was amazing against Notre Dame, did some good stuff against Oregon, too. And he shot well off the catch, and his pull-up shooting's been pretty good, too. I don't think, you know, I'm not out on Cole Anthony as a prospect or anything like that. He's a very, very good basketball player. The last couple of games have not been super great for the North Carolina Tar Heels on offense.
Huh.
Again,
I did not know that.
Yeah, now against, admittedly, an Ohio State team that is very good and a Virginia team that is not very good, but defensively is elite, right? Yep. Even without Braxton Key, Virginia is still a very good team. But UNC under 0.8 points per possession in both of those losses last week to Ohio State and to Virginia. The Tar Heels offensively, again, it's been just 9 games this year, 2 ACC contests, but effective shooting down 8% from a season ago, 3-point shooting down 8% from a season ago, assist rate down 8% from a season, or almost 9% from a season ago. Like, they've fallen off the cliff in some of these key metrics that you tend to sort of look at a lot with UNC. It's not just pace, it's assist rate that's around 60%, so they're assisting on 60% of their made field goals. That's down to 52% this year. Half-court offense, secondary break has looked really clunky. And Cole Anthony, I said this earlier, like, just not quite as explosive as I thought he was going to be, and he's really, really struggled to shoot at the rim.
Yep.
So we'll see. Long season ahead here. I'm not hitting the pin and button yet, but a little worried with what the Tar Heels have.
It definitely qualifies for ugly. There are 2 games this week against Ohio State, Virginia. So,
yeah.
Chip Patterson, you're ACC ugly.
I'm guilty of living the plush life of a credentialed media member.
Sure,
you know, I spent the entire NC State, Mississippi State Belk Bowl inside, you know, while everyone else is getting soaked outside. Way swampier. I'm preparing, and so I need to admit that I try not to complain, but I also get to enjoy the luxuries. We did see a lot of those are going to be covering Wake Forest. I'm just going to go ahead and predict in advance the open air press box of Yankee Stadium for the Pinstripe Bowl in December. You're going to catch some complaints from that moment. And so I hate to say it as ugly, but I needed a place to spotlight that, because when Wake Forest is set to maybe win 9 games for only the 3rd time in school history, when Wake Forest is trying to win a 4th straight bowl game, like, no one's actually going to be complaining that you can't write your gamer because your fingers are a little bit frozen.
Yeah.
Have you covered a game at Yankee Stadium?
I have not.
You're just aware that it's an open-air press box?
Yes.
Yeah, built for baseball.
Yeah.
But they're going to play football there. And Chip Patterson will again get to explore his baseball unders theory. Baseball stadium unders.
That's
theory.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, which always with Wake Forest is, you know.
Right, I know.
Yeah, playing, because Michigan State wants to turn this into a low-scoring rock fight. Great for the unders.
Right.
Wake Forest wants to speed it up and win this thing by 25.
Sports Channel 8, the radio show. We got some savvy listeners. Chip Patterson posited whether this was Jermaine.
Whether Jermaine played
bass. And people are telling us, no, Tito played bass live, but that there was actually like a backing band, either the Funk Brothers or somebody even named exactly who it was. Let me get it right.
Because the Funk Brothers did the rhythm section for most Motown in the 60s.
Yeah, Wilton Felder was the bass player on the Jackson 5 studio albums, according to our listener, David Jeffrey Smith, who I'm taking at his word without doing any research to back it up at all, because when somebody comes at you with info sounding that confident about it, I'm wanting to believe that.
People are saying this. You know, a lot of people are saying this. It must be true.
That's a good cynicism. Just take it at face value.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a certain way people respond.
I do love that response, though, to be able to be like, well, actually, that is a well, actually.
That's acceptable.
Open arms.
Well, I think you threw it out as a question anyway. So, yeah. All right. We're having some fun on Twitter today. This was a kind of a stolen idea. We try to be original, but we like to tell you when we borrow ideas from other people. David Hale put out the other day, your bowl name is, and had some criteria, you know, like the last place you called customer service is the sponsor, blah, 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 blah. So we decided to localize it a little bit and make your personal North Carolina bowl game. Because as we know, the Belk Bowl is going away.
Right.
Now, Charlotte will still have a bowl, and we will determine what the future sponsor will be. But we gave you some criteria to come up with your own personalized bowl game. What was the criteria, Goodson, and what are some of the bowl names that we are getting?
Yep, you started off with the it's called the either, and then you choose tomato or vinegar based on what preference of barbecue.
Sure. You have to reflect your North Carolina choices basically right in the bowl name.
Mm-hmm. Then you the last North Carolina restaurant that you ate at. Okay.
Sure.
Then the location of the last Christmas parade you attended.
We love Christmas parades here.
And then
and we determined that basically every town has one.
And then the bowls have to be presented by either your favorite of the beach, mountains, or sandhills.
All right.
So if a example is the vinegar-based Bojangles Bowl located in Roseville, presented by the mountains.
All right. And have we gotten any other good responses? Actually, people like this.
Yeah, a lot of people, a lot of vinegar-based ones. But here's a good one. The Tomato Dario Bowl in Rural Hall presented by the Sandhills. I'd go to that bowl.
Yeah, I'll check that out.
Brian Geisinger.
Yeah, I chimed in.
What was the one you gave us, BG?
I said the vinegar-based Fiction Kitchen Bowl located in Winston-Salem presented by the Mountains. Shout out Fiction Kitchen. Had a delicious dinner there Friday night.
Nice. Excellent.
Actually had a noodle bowl.
Ooh,
at Fiction Kitchen.
Good stuff.
There's a vinegar-based Death and Taxes Bowl located in Tarboro, presented by the Mountains.
Wow. I bet when they were in Tarboro for the Christmas parade, they ate it on the square, too. But I guess they've been to Death and Taxes more recently.
So yeah, we just had some fun with that. Chip, what would yours be?
The vinegar-based State of Beer Bowl, ooh, located in New York City, presented by the Sandhills.
I like that.
Wow. I like that.
State of Beer's got underrated food.
Whoa. I'm a big fan of their soup.
I like their soup. I like their like chickpeas. I like their cheese plate, and their sandwiches are
the
pretty
Sicilian,
good, too.
Hot Italian sandwiches.
So
my
good.
Name.
The girlfriend is a big fan of the grilled cheese. Big fan of the grilled cheese. Mm. Carolina Hurricanes news before we get to more bowl stuff. I've been seeing this tweeted that it was coming. This is a sort of a do you care thing, but they have introduced a new partner for their practice center, basically, the Wake Competition Center that will be in Mooresville. So you can check out more on that. We're not going to discuss a lot about the future Canes practice facility, but I understand it is big news. Congratulations to them, the team, and the facility.
Also, out this afternoon in Shams, the NBA insider reporter, mentioning that teams are monitoring Marvin Williams from the Charlotte Hornets as a possible trade chip, which is something that you could see heading into the season. Marvin's played very well this year, shooting over 65% on post-ups and over 40% on threes. A guy that could help some teams win games. I don't necessarily want the Hornets to trade him unless they can get some decent return, because I think Marvin is a good guy to have in the locker room, but just something to monitor. It's interesting.
All right. But we've got your personal bowl games, but we also have the actual bowl matchups, and it's time to go to Josh Vegas to tell us what the lines are in the bowl games of North Carolina or ACC interest. Chip Patterson, off the top of your head, can you name a state that has more than five teams going to a bowl game?
Florida.
Dang it. What do they got? Florida, Miami,
Florida State,
Florida State, Florida Atlantic.
FAU, FIU.
UCF.
UCF.
They're six.
Darn it. That's all right. It's usually Florida, Texas, California are usually the only ones that have a chance. But you wouldn't think little old North Carolina would be one of the states with five teams in bowl games. Hashtag football state. What are some of the lines of the bowl games, Josh?
Shout out North Carolina A&T.
Yep.
They're a pick'em right now in the Celebration Bowl that they're going to be playing in against Alcorn State. That's going to
take the Aggies.
Take the Aggies.
Take the Aggies.
Always take
baby.
The Aggies. The local ones of note, North Carolina number opened up a little bit higher, but it's now a 5-point favorite, and UNC is a 5-point favorite against Temple. Which, I feel like Temple is like you take them as a dog, right?
You take them at home as a dog. Because, you know, the home field advantage of playing in the Link in the home of the Eagles, in front of tens of thousands. But I think that the fun thing about North Carolina Temple is that Temple has a quarterback named Anthony Russo, who's really good, probably going to play in the NFL. Sam Howell, we obviously believe, is on a trajectory to be a pro player as well. So I think that there's a chance that this is a pretty high-scoring, good matchup. I would take the Tar Heels.
Bowls are all about, do you care?
Are we going to get some, since it's a military bowl and we have two good quarterbacks, are we going to get a lot of like cannon comparisons? Two cannon? No, nobody's feeling
on
that.
No, I like it. I was just immediately reminded that the North Carolina football Twitter account said we're headed to our nation's capital.
We talked about this. Okay. We even Josh Goodson.
Because you would stay in D.C.
Yeah, and do a lot of the events.
For the Annapolis Bowl
A lot
game.
Of the events are in D.C. Even UNC hater Josh Goodson said, yes, it's fair game for opposing fans to make fun of that tweet, but it's also not like the dumbest tweet.
Right.
It's whatever.
Bowl games. Wake Forest is a 3-point underdog in the Pinstripe Bowl against Michigan State, to which, if I had to lean something, I like the Deacs. They actually seem like they care about going to this game. They wanted to go to this game. They're having a great year. They're trying to win 9 games, and bowls are all about motivation.
They've done well in bowl games.
And I feel like they have motivation.
Michigan State is a program that wants to be winning 9 or 10 games a year. When you catch them on the 6-6 season, motivation's absolutely a factor.
Appalachian, 17-point favorite against UAB.
Are they the biggest favorite?
Or
is Florida the biggest favorite over
Florida
Virginia?
Florida is a 14-point favorite over Virginia in the Orange Bowl. No, I believe 17 is the biggest number. Of the other ACC teams to note, Boston College is an underdog in their game. Virginia Tech is a small favorite in their game. Florida State is an underdog. Louisville is a favorite. So you can kind of see the trend. Like, ACC is going to be favored in about half of their bowls and underdogs in the other half.
Chip Patterson, is there a bowl game that that intrigues you the most outside of the college football playoff?
Alabama and Michigan have only played football against each other 4 times ever.
Wow.
And they're going to be playing on New Year's Day in the Citrus Bowl. And it's also a great narrative bowl because, you know, any SEC team that's not playing for the playoff, they obviously don't care about the bowl.
Right.
When the SEC wins, because the SEC's
unless
the best. When the SEC loses a bowl game, it's like, oh, well, we didn't care about it anyway, which is going to cut both ways for Michigan and Jim Harbaugh, because this could be like a great program, you know, punch a hole in the sky,
beat Alabama,
take down Alabama.
Sure.
If Jerry Jeudy and Najee Harris and, you know, all of these long list of players are all sitting out, then even Michigan winning doesn't have the same pizzazz. And if Michigan losing and the players are sitting out, it stings double.
Alabama's only a 7-point favorite.
Is it because of the dude sitting out?
It's real. These lines
are
going.
The prospects of dudes sitting out.
They're going to go all over
the
place.
Yeah, these lines are going to dance a lot.
And is there an ACC team that got a raw deal or got the worst deal? It seemed like the bowl matchups kind of fell where they should, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that impacted the ACC that was a little bit weird, the SEC pulled some last-minute flip-flopping with Tennessee, Kentucky.
The Belk Bowl and Music City and Gator Bowl were all kind of
like swapping around at the last minute. I was really excited for the cultural clash of Virginia Tech, Mississippi State, but we trade out Mississippi State for Tennessee.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same thing, right?
Yes.
A lot of
Virginia Tech's with Kentucky now.
Yeah, Virginia Tech, Kentucky. I like that matchup.
Yeah.
It's a good, solid one to go out with on the Belk Bowl.
You've been listening to the best of Sports Channel 8, the radio show podcast. Don't forget there are many ways you can listen to this podcast, including streaming at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, and you can also subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and TuneIn. This podcast also drops every weekday at noon. Thanks again for listening to the best of Sports Channel 8, the radio show podcast.